The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Hello and welcome to Giving Up the Ghost Cast with me, Shannon Kyle.
And me, Tina Lyons.
Tina and I are two real-life, multiple best-selling ghostwriters who would like to lift the veil on the publishing industry's best-kept secret, the world of ghostwriting.
Well, you've probably never heard of us. There's a very good chance you've read our words.
So who are ghostwriters? How does ghostwriting work? And how do most bestsellers get written?
I'm so glad you are, Shannon. Let's listen to Giving Up the Ghost Cast to find out.
Hello and welcome to Giving Up the Ghost Cast. Tina and I are back in my front room. Hello, Tina. How are you doing?
I'm very well and very excited for the arrival of today's guest, the brilliant Gillian Stern. While we're waiting for her, let's see what caught our eye in the ghostwriting world this week. What I was quite interested in was what ghost could ignore. The piece was in the New Yorker this week where J.R. Moringer, still trying to pronounce that one, the ghost of Prince Harry, talked about the writing of Spare. What I found interesting about it, obviously the newspaper's all over it looking for some royal rifts, but I thought it gave us some real insights into the world of ghostwriting. It's probably about the first time I've ever seen a mainstream article saying what a ghost feels and what a ghost does. What did you think of it?
I mean, it was just absolutely incredible. I mean, it was just so poetically written as well, so beautiful. I mean, it was just like a little book in itself.
Yeah.
Some of the things that he came out with, though, I mean, I just need to know more. Number one, I need to know, where is the NDA on this, the non-disclosure agreement?
Yeah.
Number two, did Harry actually okay this? I wouldn't be surprised if he did, but at the same time, that exasperated line, I was exasperated with him at 2 a.m. I mean, that's a classic line that any newspaper's going to pull out, which the UK press obviously have. And also, what I was completely intrigued by was he says that he didn't make any recordings when he interviewed Harry.
And had hundreds and thousands of words. I agree.
So he's either got the best shorthand that we've ever known, or I don't know, I can't quite get my head around that.
There was
that.
A lot left unsaid there.
Yeah.
Perhaps he went home every day and just wrote copious notes, but it sounded like quite an intense period, didn't it? I mean,
yeah.
Both on Zoom and then staying at his guest house. But I think my favourite part of the whole piece was when he first started out in ghostwriting and he met up with all these other ghostwriters who all basically sort of howled, don't do it, whatever you do.
Well, actually, I pulled out a quote from it because I was really taken with this. He says, I simply remind the callers that ghostwriting is an art and urge them not to let those who cast it as hacky, shady or faddish, it's been around for thousands of years, dim their pride. I also tell them that they're providing a vital public service, helping to shore up the publishing industry, since most of the titles on this week's bestseller list were written by someone besides the named author. And I thought, thank you, JR.
Yes.
That is a great shout out for Ghosts Everywhere. We love you.
Yeah. He can do no wrong in our eyes from now on.
So to introduce our guest for today's episode, it's probably fair to say that Gillian Stern is one of the most in-demand ghostwriters and editors today. After a career working as a commissioning editor in academic publishing, Gilly asked a leading literary agency if she could read their slush pile. And it was Gilly's choice from that slush pile that went on to win the Whitbread First Novel Award and then the Richard and Judy Summer Book Club. And from that moment on, Gilly has not looked back. She has edited an enormous number of novels, helping debut novelists find top agents, with many going on to become bestsellers. To date, she has ghosted with all of the main publishers, including Bloomsbury, Picador, Hodder, Penguin Random House and Orion. Her memoir she ghosted was named as W.H. Smith's Non-Fiction Book of the Year, and she has since ghosted a sequel for the same author, as well as several other memoirs that have been Sunday Times and Amazon bestsellers. Much of Gilly's work is under wraps, and many of her clients are too famous for even us to know about. But what we can say is that she's worked with numerous celebrities, including royalty. She's been name-dropped by Craig David on Sunday Brunch, talking about his book, and she is one of the publishing industry's best kept and best-selling secrets. So we spoke to Gilly earlier, and I'm afraid in this episode we've got a fourth member in the room, along with our producer, Amanda. We've got Zorro, our border staffy cross, who does kind of snore and make himself known at times, pitter-pattering around with his little feet. So you'll have to forgive the doggier feet.
Welcome to Zorro too.
I mean, the first question of all for listeners who are not familiar with ghostwriting and how close ghosts need to get to their clients, can you let us know why ghosting a book can become an emotional experience?
I think because you really have to inhabit the person you're ghosting. You have to become close to them. You have to understand things from their point of view. And as the process gets going, I think when the trust is established or starts flowing in, then I think it's almost a kind of excuse or a platform for that person to just tell you how it is, and to also, as people often do, and they tell me, go where they've never gone before. So you are really uncovering things that sometimes they've never spoken about. You're creating a sort of space where they are permitted to sort of talk. They're not being charged like a therapist would charge them. So they just start talking. And sometimes I've got an idea of what I want to talk about in a session. We want to talk about, for example, childhood or early experiences of remembering something. And that can lead to places that you haven't expected it to go. And that can actually be dynamite material. And so it's basically that absolute feeling that you are them and you want to do the best by them. So you are giving them that space to open up. And in that comes quite a lot of emotion.
And how do you develop that trust initially? I mean, is it just a case of time? Somebody has to, I mean, is there some kind of special secret recipe for getting someone to trust you and open up?
I think because you've been through a process of interviews, I think it's still quaintly called a beauty parade, where you go and with your agent or with their agent and publisher or whatever, and you sit around and talk. There's been that sort of initial kind of contact and spark for you to get the job. And then I think you really have to start developing that trust through spending time together. So I never go straight into it. I'll go round, we might go for a walk, we might meet out in a cafe, etc. So you sort of start to kind of not never become their friend, but you start to let them see who you are a bit and start talking about just ordinary everyday things. And then that gradually, the trust gradually lays down and you can develop it from there, really.
You just mentioned there, you never become their friend. You become very, I mean, in my experience, you do become very close to people that you work with, but you're very specific about not becoming their friend. Why do you say that?
I think because I've learned the hard way. I think one thing to mention is the invention of WhatsApp and messaging. And I think I like to give someone total access to me. If they come up with a thought, if they come up with something after a session they've thought about or they want to explore, I'm very happy for them to WhatsApp me. And in fact, sometimes some of my best ideas come from reading a WhatsApp chain that's developed after a session. So sometimes that's quite seductive. I've ghosted some really interesting, you know, people that I would fall in love with. I mean, I think my idea is to get the reader in some way to fall in love or in empathy or in sympathy or, you know, to connect with that person. And sometimes I've learned, right, that I have thought that this person is my friend and I've started to talk about myself, which is just the wrong way to go. I do remember once interviewing someone extremely famous. I had to take someone with me who was an expert in the subject, in the profession that this person was. And she was so chuffed to meet the celebrity that when we came back, I printed out the transcripts. She spoke that much. And he spoke in one sentence, right? Because she wanted to talk about herself so much and become sort of his friend or sort of, you know, admire me, sort of, I know so much about you. So you have to kind of really hold back, I think, as to how you're going to develop that side of things, which inevitably you become very involved in. I really care. And if someone is talking to me about something they've never spoken about before or some childhood experience or something that's happened to them and that's, you know, marked them for their lives and that's why, you know, they had to leave the country or they had to leave public life or whatever, then I do become very sort of involved and attached to that. And you can quite easily become very emotionally involved. I mean, my WhatsApp, it could be going through the night, right? I'm more intimate with that person than I am maybe with my family. That's dangerous.
For that brief period.
For that brief period, because then once that manuscript is in at the publishers, that's it. Good night, ghost.
And the sense of loss at that point is acute if you believe that they're friends, presumably, or is it just easier just to detach yourself from it?
I think the emotional fallout of the end of a job, the separation anxiety, can be really acute. And over the years, I've handled it in different ways. So I'm better at it now. But sometimes I think, well, actually, yeah, no, we weren't friends, but maybe now, you know, now that the book's done and actually we are so close, you know, he tells me everything or she tells me everything, we're going to be friends. But it doesn't work like that. It's the end.
And can you tell us and maybe give some examples of how you managed to implement some of those boundaries? Because I think it is a really, really difficult line that a ghostwriter has to straddle, because we do have to become friends for the course of the book, at least. I mean, you know, you're not going to sit down and shoot the breeze with someone who you don't particularly like. And maybe we do at times have to share a bit of ourselves, because otherwise they, you know, we're just a blank page to them. We're just a blank person. You know, we have to, you know, see the humanity in each other. So how did you go about setting some of those boundaries?
So I think by being very strict with myself, sometimes deleting their number, right, but not the chain of messages, because I've always wanted to keep those. So what happens is you write the book and then you give the manuscript to the publisher, and then there is a period of grace, because there's the period when everybody's reading it, people are coming back with comments, you're going back to them and saying, right, we need to change this, or we need to add more here, more there. And so there is, even though you're not interviewing and spending that sort of very intimate time with them, there is a whole period, and I think really till the book comes out, until the book is launched, that there is that sort of excuse to kind of keep that thread open. And I have to say, it comes from both sides, because there's a sort of codependency, really. I've managed to be friends with one who was a really emotional book, really emotional book. And we managed, because sometimes I'd go and his wife would answer the door and say, ah, respite care, come in.
Oh, my goodness.
And she and I have become really good friends. And then he and I actually have become friends. And friends so much so that I won't be able to ever do a book again with him. But comes around sometimes for supper, I still see them. And so that, sometimes you can rescue something out of it. I still don't think he knows me, and I don't think he really wants to either. But I'm still so kind of enmeshed in that, in what the work we did that led to the book, that I don't think I can really, I don't think I'd ever really be able to let him go out of my life.
Wow. What? That's intense.
It is. But what happens there? I mean, you talked about that period of respite with, you know, that when the publishers are doing all of their bit and you have that separation. I mean, do you normally get invited to the big book launch or get involved with that? And is that like sort of seeing an ex, a beloved ex, and it all comes flooding back?
They're not yet an ex, right? Because they're still current. But I suppose that sort of thread, that golden thread of intimacy where you know everything. So one person I worked with, which was really an intense edit rather than a ghosting job, although I did kind of help write some of it. He's a broadcaster, and I would be able to take his emotional temperature within about four sentences of hearing him on the radio.
Wow.
And that was really something. And I would know what kind of mood he was in, what emotional turmoil he'd been through, etc. It was quite extraordinary. And then you lose that. And so you turn on the radio, watch the television, and you can't tell, and you feel like that's been severed. But for that period, you can keep up, because publishing isn't, dare I say it, what it used to be. And sometimes the author won't know what's happening, so will want to phone me and say, well, I haven't heard from, you know, from publicity, or I have, and I'm not sure whether I should do this. And even though their agent is there for them, they still want to talk about those things. You can keep it going for a while. I think the book I last ghosted, we were incredibly friendly and close. And of course, that person said, I'm not going to be like the others. We're going to still see each other, and I'm going to still, you know, WhatsApp you every day. And, you know, you've unlocked, you know, that story that will make me be able to go on with the rest of my life. Well, occasionally, you know, I'll hear from him, but it's not what it was.
No.
But that's okay, because you move on. And actually, as you accumulate and you do more books and you have more relationships like that, you can take them for what they are, for the intensity of what they are for that time. And then, you know, well, you hope that something else is going to come along and replace it.
I'm quite interested to know whether you ever actually have had to sort of ditch a client or say to them, look, no, you know, you can't be WhatsApping me anymore.
No, I haven't had to ditch them while I've been working with them. But there have been one or two where I, yes, have had to say, okay, it's over now. You know,
yeah,
congratulations.
Yeah, that's what I meant, actually, yes, after the book.
Yes,
just
it's
sort of
over
say,
now.
Yeah.
I can't, I'm not there now to curate your emotions.
Wow.
You know, we've done that. You know, the book has been a great success and, you know, now you've got this platform to talk about this or that. Yes, so a couple of times I've had to basically say, yes, that's not for me now.
Wow. And yeah. But I mean, you have to do that for your own self-protection, otherwise you go mad. I mean, I think there's a tendency sometimes to want to people please, particularly during the job, because
yes.
You've kind of got to get on with someone, even if they're not the sort of person that you necessarily would hang out with.
Oh, no, of course. Of course. And yes, I like to be available because, as I said, sometimes you get these gems. You know, sometimes you'll get... I wish I could talk specifically. I can't. There was one person I was working with and there was a whole... archive of stuff that hadn't been accessed, and one day I walked in and because of a WhatsApp exchange they said, okay, take it. And that unlocked, I wanted to do it together but they weren't comfortable with that, so I took it away, transcribed quite a lot of it so they could see it not in the person's writing that it was in, so it was a little bit more removed. And that, I'm really sorry to say, gave me the narrative drive for the book.
Wow.
So it really did. It was really worth the kind of torment for both of us getting there to that place. And then the book fell into place.
Mm. I mean, J.R. Moheringer, I hope I've said that correctly, he talks about in his New Yorker piece that he had to kind of clamp down on Harry and just say, look, you can't put in this salient line that you think is so important because it just doesn't work. I mean, how often have you had to do that? And do you find that an easy thing to do?
Yes, I'm quite strict and I'm quite firm, I think. And I totally agreed with him. I think probably you did too, that line, his... rejoinder, right, was just too much. It just was, I mean, my motto is less is more. Mm. And that would have just tipped it over the balance. On the other hand, I remember when that book was sort of being trailed, there was the incident where apparently William hit Harry and he fell backwards and he fell onto a dog bowl and it shattered. Now, I thought that was a stroke of absolute genius by the ghostwriter, because, you know, because they're royal, that's going to be porcelain. It's not going to be a sort of metal kind of dog bowl. And it's on a sort of, I think they said on a tiled floor or, you know, a beautiful floor or something. And so that really finished off the story, didn't it? You could hear it. You could see the aftermath of it. You could see the dog bowl shattering across the beautiful floor. And so I thought that was genius. But I would have been absolutely the same as him, and I would have fought not to have that in. And I would have explained it and tried to get the author to understand why it didn't need to go in.
That fight went on for quite a while between the author and the ghost. Do you find normally that your authors, the people that you work with, give in fairly easily, some easier than others, I'm sure, but what is your sort of killer line that will persuade them that you actually know what should be in a book?
I suppose I'll let them have it in for a bit, leave it, and then go back to it and hopefully have shown them some other way in another part of the book that we don't need this, and then I'll be able to compare it. Or I might, I've got a great technique of echoing. So we leave that incident as it is, but maybe later something can then echo back to it. And because the incident has been sort of framed in a way that's kind of alive to the reader, they can have another go at it, but later on in the book, so it picks up the echo of it.
Oh.
It's hard to explain unless you see it on the page, but sometimes that can work. But I have no problem, like J.R. Mahringa. I was trying to look up how you say his name.
We've all stumbled. Yeah, no.
I saw that and thought, I'm absolutely on your side, mate. I would absolutely have done the same. Even if it was a whole session, I would have tried to explain why that's too much.
But you've obviously worked with some really big names, which sadly we don't know. Is there an element that you feel a little bit intimidated to say to a client or an author, look, this shouldn't go in, and it shouldn't go in because of this, it's not important, it's not the right story? Because it can be intimidating. I mean, I think, you know, lesser experienced ghostwriters might think, I'm going to be fired any second, or they're going to argue back or be aggressive.
Yes, I've been intimidated, and yes, I've given in my early days. But, you know, I think sometimes with the long game, and also because somebody who's given me a job might have read something I've already done or been involved with, I think there's quite a lot of trust on that side. And they're not writers. I mean, I came in through editing, so struggled to think of myself as a writer. But they're not writers. And sometimes they do trust you. I haven't really come across an incident where I've really argued with someone. I've argued about what should go in, like incidents, you know, or stories, what should go in or be left out, or what a reader might want. I mean, the amount of people who, you know, want to write about their days in Oxford or Cambridge, or, you know, it's so tedious, or boarding school, or something that just is so boring for a reader.
So we have Zorro, our snappy dog, trotting around the living room at the moment, if anyone can hear that.
And thumping his tail.
Thumping his tail. I once heard a story about a journalist from a mainstream paper who suffered from PTSD after spending years as a crime reporter reporting from the Old Bailey. And do you think that there's actually a danger of that happening to a ghostwriter? Because we hear some really powerful stories, yes, and deeply emotional and sometimes very distressing stories.
Yes. I think for me, the way I get through it is that it's only really that sort of fashionable word of triggering. I have sat with people who have talked about things in their lives. Afterwards, I've realised that it's made me feel very uncomfortable and emotional about myself and things that have happened in my life. And it's not for me to then come back to them and tell them, because I don't want them to know that side of me. Even though I can be quite intimate with them and tell them things, there are lots of things that I will keep, you know, to myself, because as I said before, even the ones I think who love me a little bit go off, and so why would I want to give them, you know, sort of my darkest, deepest secrets? I suppose I can detach. I think I am quite I'm a person that can detach from somebody's experience. I can by now see it as narrative, unless it really triggers me. So one job was based in South London, and I would feel very, very emotional when I left. I found it very, very difficult. I don't want to take these things home because it's just tedious for everyone. I can't really talk about it. And, you know, so I used to walk from this place, I can't even say where it is, but South London, and I used to walk all the way into town.
Wow.
And it would take about an hour, and, you know, to the tube station that was going to help me, but it would take about an hour and a half, and I'd eat a lot of crisps on the way and or stop for a hamburger and chips or something, but I knew that was the way I had to cope with it. And one of the things I do is I swim every single morning outdoors in a local pool, and that really helps me. I really do. I've come to see how that is my de-stressing from what I've heard the day before or what I know I'm going to hear. And I think that's the way I get through it, really.
Yeah, I can really relate to that, actually. I mean, particularly getting into water, because it's almost like a literally cleansing, you know, you're like sort of reborn afterwards sometimes. And you do need to allow that as part of the job, actually, to kind of decompress, to process, and then to kind of get back into inside your own head and your own body, to get back into your home. And so you're not taking this stuff with you.
Yes. And I don't know if you saw recently that Rachel Mills, the agent, wrote a really lovely piece about how people that are working with memorists should get some kind of support. What she didn't include were ghostwriters, not because she doesn't care, she's the loveliest agent, but because she doesn't use ghostwriters, so it just wasn't on her radar. So I did contact the bookseller and ask if I could write a piece on how ghostwriters need that too. Because my experience actually is, apart from a few agents and publishers, that you do get left. You know, you get a phone call from the editor saying, oh, when's chapter 7 coming? But you never get a phone call saying, how are you doing? How is it? And sometimes that's because the people I'm ghosting are quite famous and their management team has kept them away from the publisher. So they're not having the everyday interaction with the publishing team, who therefore don't know them and therefore don't know that it's been difficult or don't know that it's been dramatic, or I've uncovered some things that are really quite difficult to hear. Quite a lot of things you hear don't reach the page. They're not relevant, or the person's gone off on a tangent and then they've said, no, I don't want any of that in. And so
I always find that quite infuriating when someone will spend half an hour telling you a very in-depth story and then says, but that can't possibly go in. And I just want to say, I'm not your best friend. Let's just concentrate.
I'm not your therapist.
Exactly.
That's the thing. Like, yeah. That's the thing. And I think, you know, sometimes most people say to me at some point during the process, oh, this is like therapy. It's wonderful. And I'm thinking, yeah. And I get quite a lot for the page, but I'm not a therapist. And sometimes I don't know what to do with it.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
I wonder if there's any way around that, actually, because arguably, ghostwriting, you never get as close to somebody inside somebody's head as you do when you're a ghostwriter. Even a therapist, you know, it's an hour on the clock, it's switched on, it's switched off. Thank you very much. You leave the room now. Here's my 150 quid. Whereas with a ghostwriter, this is days, months, weeks, hours, years sometimes of interview time, of, you know, processing all kinds of childhood stuff, of them uncovering stuff they might never have thought about themselves. All of that is kind of unavoidable. So I think that actually, yeah, we are therapists plus.
Absolutely. And it is that constant thing, as I said, of WhatsApp and messaging. Sometimes, yeah, you can look back at the stream of messages and think, my God, this was like some kind of affair.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
This is because actually, you know, we all know that affairs, you know, can be through the mind, right? It's more powerful sometimes. I know more about you than anybody else does. That's an incredibly sort of privileged but also dangerous position to be in.
Yes.
So yes, I think we are in a very unusual position. And we also haven't been taught the techniques like a therapist has of, well, put them aside. Because even if you do the walk, as I said, and have the chips, the next day you have to write it all.
Yes.
So you're sort of visiting it again. I would say that sometimes I become those people. I really feel I am them, which again is bonkers when I think about some of the people and their life experiences compared to mine.
But I don't think there's any way around that.
No.
There's no halfway house. You can't sort of like half do it or think, oh, dip in and out of it. Or I mean, you really have to go for it if you're going to do the job properly. And
yes.
I think can't be underestimated what that actually involves.
Yes. One of the things I have ghosted, I'd say a minor royal really, but and one of the things that I found extraordinary about that one was that some of the stories she told me about her childhood and things that happened to her were so off the scale compared to how we bring up our children that my reaction, my emotional reaction to it, was swiftly cut off, because that's not how English aristocracy royals deal with emotions. I mean, this isn't giving anything away, I don't think, but sort of socialites, or sort of, you know, people sort of up in the echelons of aristocracy or whatever. And one of the most common things is adultery. To them, it's really nothing. It's really just how it is. You get married, your husband may also be gay and need a male lover to satisfy him, or he already has a mistress that he's had for a long time, and you simply get on with it. You know, that's just how it is. And it's the sort of middle classes and, you know, who are sort of fussing about it, because, you know, it's just really just get on with it. It's nothing. It's nothing that you should sort of be worried about. And so those sorts of reactions, I have to kind of temper myself, because that's the story. I can't then put in something about how actually being left for a few months by a parent and not collected didn't harm them, they believe. And I can't then ascribe harm to that. And that's sometimes quite difficult. Mm. There's no way around that.
But also you're having to balance what the reader might think as well, because the majority of readers would read that and go, oh, well, actually, you know, aren't we addressing the fact that this is like not child abuse, or is it really bad for a marriage or what have you?
Yes. And so sometimes I've been able to get them to address that. You know, things were different then, or, you know, something crass like that, or I've brought up my children in a different way, because actually I realise probably being sent away from the age of 4 wasn't the right way. So we waited till they were 8 and then sent them away, that sort of thing. You know? So yes, you do have to think about the reader. But sometimes you can tell a story in their voice that leaves so much space around it, in a sense, that you know the reader will read into it.
Mm. Going back to the therapist's idea, there is this idea of transference, isn't there? That the therapist can also feel emotionally involved as well as the person having the therapy. And have you ever sort of felt yourself, I mean, like you've sort of said, falling in love quite, you know, yes, in a kind of like glib manner. But I mean, have yes, there been times where you thought, do you know what? I actually feel a bit obsessed with this person. This is, you know, I need to switch off now.
Yes.
Mm. Yes. Short answer.
Yes, because actually someone whose book I mostly edited, there was a manuscript, but we started again. So it was very involved. I was a huge fan of his. And when I went to the interview at the publishers, I literally had to go into the bathroom and do all my giggling and smiling and texting, I'm going to meet them, you know, before I did. And actually, what really surprised me was this person, you know, has such a different persona in real life.
Never meet your heroes.
Never meet your heroes. He was lovely, but actually there was a bit of a wall at the interview, and I thought, oh, I've sort of listened to this person or watched this person for so long, and I'm such a fan, and they're so different in real life. But actually, once I got past that barrier, which took a few weeks or months, then things changed, and they were more like their persona, I think.
That's interesting. I mean, some people presumably will respond very quickly and build that trust very quickly, but you're saying it's taking a few weeks, even months, with this particular person.
Yes.
What's the difference? What's the deciding amount? I mean, just every person's different.
I think also, yes, every person's different, but also their willingness to do the book, because sometimes, you know, people have to realise, I think, that it's not necessarily the celebrity that goes to the publisher or agent and says, I need to write my memoir, I need my book out there. It's often a commercial, transactional thing that the agent has said, oh, I look after this person, and a publisher has said, oh, let's get their memoir out, or let's get their story about this or that out. And so actually, they're not that willing to do it. They're not comfortable necessarily speaking about things that they haven't spoken about before that might then publicly hit a page and be out there forever. Mm. So it's kind of being able to curate that. And sometimes I will write the proposal for the book with the person. So that's obviously a different process to coming in at the point where the book has been signed. There is a an outline for the book already in existence, that makes a big difference. Because if you're writing it with them, then you can shape it earlier on, and that's quite a lot of work. So you've built the trust at that process. But if you're coming in at the time when they've decided they need a ghost, the sort of outline's already there, it's kind of in black and white, and you know, that's a sort of process of negotiation, because sometimes you might change things. So it's really their willingness to be writing their memoir.
Are there any sort of hints and tips to sort of speed up the trust building process? Because obviously I know time helps, of course.
Time really helps. I really feel sometimes it is literally about not diving in straight away. It's about going for a walk. I mean, sometimes the people are a bit famous and they don't want to go for walks. So you just go around and have a cup of tea. I mean, one person I worked with, we started off in this room where he was quite defensive about speaking. And we started off in this tiny little room on the floor on a rug that was sort of womb-like, where I had to sit sort of backed up against one wall and he had to sit backed up against another wall. And it was because he was so sort of apprehensive about really talking. And it was only sort of in week six that we went downstairs to a bigger room and then into one of the lovely rooms where we both sprawled on armchairs for the rest of the year. I mean, you couldn't have written it. I really wish we had been able to write that. Yeah, you can speed it up by, I think, really not rushing into it and taking the time that they need to start feeling comfortable with you. And you know when they do, because you're not on script, if you like. You know, so you've got the outline and you'll say, right, today we're covering your rise to fame. Well, actually, you might never get there on that session because you've been talking about something that came up from something before. It's just about building.
And then letting it run, presumably, once they decide that you're okay.
Letting it run and run, yeah.
One of the emotions that we haven't covered, actually, is the sense of loneliness, which I think all ghosts can identify with, particularly when you are holding such a vast amount of emotional information that belongs to somebody else. Talked a bit about walking and swimming. I mean, sometimes you must be bursting to tell somebody something.
Bursting. And sometimes I think people ask me often if I'm going to write my own book. Mm. And I can't do that until everyone's dead. But sometimes I can, if I've had a really good story, there's been some really good stories, especially with the royals or those people, I can kind of like tell the story in a way that doesn't sort of give it away. And that really helps. Mm. But yes, no, it is lonely. It's really lonely. Although I've always got that person with me. I feel they're sitting on my shoulder, which is a cliche, but they really are, because I'm so invested in it and so close to them for that period. I want to do the best for them. I feel that they're with me, and if I'm feeling that I'm stuck or I need something, often I'm at a stage with them that I can ring them or WhatsApp them and say, you know, can we have a chat, whatever. I love it. It's really privileged.
We're asking the same final three questions for everyone. I'm going to throw them out there and you can say whatever you like. So number one, on your fantasy bookshelf, which books have you ghosted?
So can that be novels?
Yes, it can be anything you like.
Okay, well, so basically I would have ghosted Underworld by Don DeLillo. I would have ghosted John Cheever's Journals. I would have ghosted anything by Joan Didion, anything by Saul Bellow, and everything by Deborah Levy.
Wow, that's some list.
Wow, that's quite a list. I'm going to go back and look at my bookshelf. So, okay, my second one, and I can almost anticipate your answer, but what's the biggest secret that you can tell us about ghosting?
Okay, so I once worked on a book where the first meeting that the author and I had was, we had to meet in the middle of the lake in Central Park on a rowing boat.
Wow.
Where we had to start talking about their manuscript. And that person was upset about some of the things that I'd said. And so very dramatically started screwing up bits of the manuscript and throwing it in the lake. That was quite something. And then recovered enough to ask me to go for a week's editing in Barbados.
Wow. Did that make up for that incident?
It certainly did.
Love
it. Fantastic story.
And then the third and final one is, what's the title for the book about your life?
Okay, that's a really hard one. Now, one of my favourite titles is Slouching Towards Bethlehem by Joan Didion. So I've thought about a kind of play on that about swimming. So like crawling towards or swimming towards. But then I couldn't think of where I was going to swim towards. So I think it would have to be... So one of my favourite titles ever is Dreams of Leaving by Rupert Thompson. It's a novel by Rupert Thompson. And I just love that title. And I was once standing in a book launch or book party or publishing party, and we were standing in a circle, and someone said to me, because I'm notoriously bad at coming up with titles, what do you think of that title? And I said, oh, well, it's nothing like my favourite title, Dreams of Leaving by Rupert Thompson. And Rupert Thompson was standing in that circle, and he said, that's my book. And I felt really happy. So I think mine would be Dreams of, comma, Swimming.
Mm-hmm. Love it.
Yes, because, I love swimming so much.
Gillian, that was absolutely fantastic. I could literally talk to you all night.
So
I really appreciate you taking your time out to speak to us.
It's a pleasure.
And it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
That was brilliant. So lovely to hear from Gillian. I have to say, one of the things that stood out for me was her talking about her swimming, because I know that, Shannon, you're a swimmer and I'm a swimmer. And I sort of feel that we should do a poll of the ghosts in the ghostwriting agency and see how many of us are swimmers. Is this a thing? Do we sort of cleanse our souls afterwards?
Yeah, we should maybe have like a ghost like pool party where we can all just like jump in and out and just kind of...
It's getting better and better. I hadn't thought of that, but I'm count me in.
Yeah, I mean, Gillian's experience is absolutely extraordinary. And what really struck me as well was the depth of how much she cares so deeply. You know, if anyone was to ever ghostwrite my book, which for no reason will that ever happen, and unfortunately, but Gilly would be my number one person to go to, because she's just got this depth of humanity and sensitivity and insight. And I can imagine that anybody would want to tell her anything.
Yeah, it also sounded exhausting, these sort of 24-hour WhatsApps from authors.
Yeah.
I mean, I do get WhatsApp from authors that I work with, but not at that intensity. I just thought that was so patient of her.
Yeah, well, you can see why she's one of the best, because she really does give it her all. And hats off to Gilly, we love her.
Now it's that time of the show. It's of course our regular segment when we look at a ghostwritten book from times gone by. What have we got this week, Shannon?
Well, I was actually really surprised by this myself. So Flowers in the Attic is a 1979 Gothic novel that, if you are a certain age, you will have read as a teen. I absolutely loved this book. I remember thinking it was the most salacious, the most just unbelievable subject matter. I mean, for those that don't know, it's the story of the Dahlanger family, and it's told from the point of view of Kathy Dahlanger. I can't say that. It's just like the Moringa thing. I just like can't get my head around these Americans. But anyway, it's basically a story about this family that get locked in the attic, and then they grow up and there's incest and there's all kinds of things going, and you've got to read it if you haven't. And it was just an enormous story, and it sold something like over 40 million copies worldwide, and everybody was talking about this book because it was just so out there. But what I didn't know is there was a subsequent series of these books, and I absolutely loved those as a teen as well. And all of those books were ghosted. So the original story was written by V.C. Andrews, and then she actually died in 1986. And then for 26 years, a man called Andrew Neiderman, he actually accidentally, like we all fall into this industry, he was accidentally asked to help. Poor V.C. Andrews passed away. And Neiderman had the same agent, and he was told over lunch one day that he might need him to step in and help. And so essentially, he just started writing these books, and it was tricky for him because he said that he ended up having to use two different computers. So he would have one computer for his own books under Neiderman, and then he'd have another computer for the V.C. Andrew books.
Gosh.
And he'd almost spun his chair around, you know, in between them. And he also felt that she was channeling, you know, through him. And also because he was a man writing from a female point of view, like pretty much for a female audience, he found it quite a challenge. So he would turn to his wife and granddaughters for help. Nobody had a clue because it was all under VC Andrews. So, I mean, he did a pretty good job, let's face it.
I think this is more common than most people imagine with these sort of long-running series. I mean, that's like the Nancy Drew type stories. And there's so many of them and there's such a demand and, you know, so prolific.
Like James Patterson as well. Yeah.
So it's team of ghosts, keep the cash machine going, produce 12 books a year, which we know is not feasible for one author. But that's how it works.
Mm.
But yes, sometimes people are very shocked, isn't it? They see the name on the cover, that is them. And then, gosh, it's somebody else. It's surprising, even you as a ghost are like, oh.
Yeah, exactly. But it just goes to show, though, that ghostwriting, I mean, it is a skill, obviously, but it doesn't really matter. I mean, you know, as long as the stories are good and well written, it doesn't matter almost who has written them, VC Andrews or the ghost. I mean, he's managed to do it that well that and nobody really minds. But anyway, it's a bit of a surprise.
Fed the machine.
So that's all for today. Thanks again to Gillian Stern for joining us, and thanks of course to you for listening, and see you next time on Giving Up the Ghost Cast. Goodbye for now.
Goodbye. Giving Up the Ghost Cast is produced by Amanda Redman and brought to you by the Ghostwriters Agency.
Thanks so much for joining us. Please remember to rate and review us on your listening app. It helps us to get noticed in the noisy world of podcasts.
Yes, it does. And if you want to get in touch, you can do so by going to theghostwritersagency.com
or following us on Twitter at GW Agency Ghosts.
See you next time. Goodbye for now.
Goodbye.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Lowe's knows to bring your vision to life, it's important to find the right color. That's why Mylowe's Rewards members get a free paint or exterior stain sample to test your look and find the perfect color to confidently refresh your space. Lowe's, we help, you save. Offer valid in-store only 6/19 through 6/25. Limit one per customer while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See associate for details. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.